had served in the ship before, so he went over and had a look around. He report back to Dad what she was like.
Yeah.
And they had, yes, they did have at that point two American cruisers which they got from the USN. So they were becoming Americanized even then. But they were very, very genial, and they were delighted to see us, and they gave us a terribly good time. Terribly is the word, boy.
I get the impression that the commander had quite a busy session. Did you actually left port?
You bet.
Yeah.
Yep, yep. Well, we sent a large team of officers and men up to Santiago for some Canadian occasion, which was, I think, probably cooked up, but at any rate, we sent them up. And apparently they were a great success. I wasn't, the captain went up, so I had to stay back. And I went up after he'd come back, because a cousin of mine was the British ambassador there, and so I went up and stayed with him for a couple of nights just to see Santiago. But we had a very good band, and we had a very good guard, and they used to beat retreat. Do the sunset ceremony thing. And wherever we went, they did it alongside on the jetty to finish off our official reception for the local people.
Oh, yeah, so that must have been a show.
It was. People sobbing, crying, you know, it's a very moving thing.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
And it's particularly done in that sort of setting. It's really very terrific. And I think, if I remember rightly, the captain took this lot up to Santiago and they did it in the main square or something, which was good fun for the president and came and all that sort of thing. It's a good publicity for Canada, particularly for the Navy, of course. And so we went. We went from there down to through the Straits of Magellan. We went through the Straits of Magellan because Uganda had been around the Horn, so we went the other way because, you know, there's no point in retracing each other's steps. So we went to Punta Arenas, where I phoned my wife in Victoria from Punta Arenas just to say that I had.
To say that you had. That's the most southerly, I suppose, habitable part.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
And it's quite a large town.
Isn't there?
Yeah. I don't know. A couple of thousand people, or maybe more.
Really?
Yeah.
What the heavens name they do down there?
Oh, sheep ranching mostly, really. A bit of fishing.
Mm-hmm.
And that post of empire, the Chileans, you know, the always arguing with the Argentinos about something, and Punta Arenas might easily be one of them one day, so they have to have a presence there.
Yeah.
And that was of interest, and then on to the Falkland Islands, and which was most interesting. Terrible, terrible place. Even the Outer Hebrides, it really looked rather like the Outer Hebrides.
Did it?
Yeah.
Pretty barren.
Yeah, very barren.
The RN still have a station there at that time?
No. There was an RN frigate there, but she'd just come down to meet us. She was one of the frigates on the station. I can't remember her name now. St. Austell Bay. Commanded as it happened by a friend of mine, so it was very pleasant.
Oh, yeah.
And we went from there to Buenos Aires, where Perón was still in power, and so Argentina was a police state. And interesting it was, too.
Was it? In what way?
Well, have you ever been in a police state?
No.
Well, this is it. This is what's interesting about it, because there's no freedom at all. And nobody can do anything unless they're allowed to, specifically, so to speak.
But was this actually was noticeable, was it?
Oh, yeah, because the secret police were there all the time. We had a liaison officer and a policeman. Heavens, he was a Gestapo man, if ever there was one.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Very charming.
Yeah.
Because he was told to be charming. And they were doubly charming to us because on our way up channel, we were rammed by a Chilean freighter. They hit us on the armor belt, luckily, so it didn't do too much damage to the hull, but it wiped off our starboard forward propeller, which looked like a clenched fist when we did finally have a look at it. But Perón was furious, and he clapped the pilot in jail without even asking whether he was guilty or not. Well, the lawsuit went on and on and on and on to get ahead of myself a whole lot. And I think the Admiralty Court eventually said that we were partly to blame and so was they. I don't think we were, but this is what the court certainly decided. So anyway, we arrived in there with only three quarters of our wheels turning, and Perón came down to see us a couple of days later, by which time we'd slapped paint over the rest of the things, the bends and the dents and so on. But he was not pleased, not pleased, and so he told everybody to look after us. But he did.
They did. Oh, right. Well, they're from disaster sometimes springs.
I think, mind you, they might have very likely pushed the boat out quite firmly in any case, because when Uganda had gone around South America how many years before, 5 years before, they had not gone to the Argentine, and this was by decision of external affairs, because external at that time were making faces at Perón. He was making faces back again. In fact, we were not at all friendly. Well, the wheels had turned a bit, and we were a bit more friendly, and it was desired that we go to Buenos Aires. And I'm very glad we did. There's no other way I'd have ever got there.
No.
Most interesting place, and golly, as I say, the hospitality was comme il faut.
What did you do about this propeller? Did you have to come home with it like that, or were you able to ship another?
No, we didn't have a spare, of course you don't, and they offered to dock us there and fix it, and the captain wouldn't have anything to do with that. He took a scunner to Perón and all his works, and our next port of call was Rio, where we had a four-day program. Well, we ended up by doing the program, and then we went into dry dock. We were there for 10 more days, unofficial sort of. Well, that was good fun, but at any rate, we could unship the propeller and hoist it on inboard so that we could bring it home. So we came home with three propellers.
At least you didn't have this thing dragging, eh?
No, but the starboard after propeller was also nicked. It wasn't as good as it might have been. And it really had a tremendous effect on our stern power, particularly. Mm-hmm. And for maneuvering and so on, she just wouldn't handle the way she normally did. She was a pretty good ship to handle, almost like a destroyer, if you remember that she was a lot bigger.
Yeah.
You could do the same things, almost.
Could you?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Lots of power.
Turning them on the tail.
Lots of power, yeah.
Lots of power. But
were the engines damaged because of this?
No, the shock was taken in the plumber blocks and in the thrust blocks, which were hurt a little,
yeah,
but not badly. It wasn't transmitted into the turbines, mm-hmm, luckily, or the gearing, yeah, which would have been disastrous. But I think we got away with that bit. I'm not sure that we didn't get the engine stopped before this ship hit, which would have helped too. I can't remember. I was on the bridge, and actually I didn't feel the impact because I could see it was going to take place aft, and so I was hurrying aft, and I was actually in the air, jumping down a ladder from top to bottom without touching any of the rungs when she hit.
Oh, really?
So I never felt it at all.
Yeah,
at all.
Has she hit yet? Going around asking questions.
I could see that she had.
How big a freighter was it?
Oh, big one. Oh, 10,000-12,000 tons.
Oh, I see.
No, a real thing.
Mm-hmm.
But you see, the river plate at that point is you can't really tell whether you're in mud or in water. It's very gooey, and it's silting all the time. And there isn't a hard and fast line between the bottom of the bottom of the river, mm-hmm, and the water above it. It just gradually gets less dense and less dense until it is water, with a lot of silt in it. So I don't know that we didn't touch bottom as well, but if we did, it was in this guck. It had no effect on anything.
Was the wreck of the Graf Spee still visible at that point?
At low water, yeah.
Yeah, at low water. They scrapped a bit of it by then.
Oh, yeah. People had gone picking at it, too. But we went from BA to Montevideo, and when we were leaving Montevideo, we could see it a bit better.
Because
we came out that channel instead of the other one we'd come in by.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. That was still there, yeah.
Oh. And you got rid of your damaged prop at Rio.
Mm-hmm.
And then carried
it on. That delay meant we had to cut out one visit. We were going to go to La Huayra in Venezuela, yeah, I think so. which had to be cut right out, which didn't please that government too much, I understand. Yeah. But
you had commitments at the other end. You had to be back.
Well, yeah, we had to be back. So what was the problem? I don't know, but at any rate, we did. We decided to knock that one off. I think it was probably to get home, really, and get this thing fixed.
Mm-hmm.
Can't remember now. But by this time, of course, we'd had a belly full of foreign visits anyway.
Yes,
so if there's any way we could get out of one of them, we wouldn't mind at all.
Yeah.
It's all very well. It's very interesting, and it's great fun. But, boy, you really go to sea for a rest instead of going to see the work, because of social...
After a time.
Boy. We had so many entertainments put on for us in Buenos Aires by the Argentinos that I had to fall in the duty watch of engine room one day and tell off people to go to an asado, a barbecue, because there weren't enough volunteers, because there was another one going which had been oversubscribed. So we were actually taking people out of the duty watch to send them off to one of these damn things, because to have done so would have been a loss of face for them.
Yeah.
And then it would have been a diplomatic incident again, all over again. So, weird, you know? They're just killing us with kindness. They thought they were being nice to us, but really they were killing us. And it's always been a matter of discussion, and still is when we meet old shipmates from those days, chiefs and POs and so on that I know, and who I meet around town, usually working in the liquor store, it seems to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Say, do you remember that thing in Buenos Aires? And, oh boy, of course one does, yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
And at the same time, the ship had to keep going. You were still training these young people. You had to continue to be impeccable in aspect. Oh boy, I don't know how many times we scraped the quarterdeck and painted it again. Because this damn steel deck, wherever we went, we'd pray to God and band, hobnailed boots, rifle butts,
yeah.
People stubbing cigarettes out at the reception. Oh boy, scrape it off and do it again.
There were no lack of jobs for people who deserved that kind of job.
Not at all.
There weren't enough people to.
But eventually you had the wardroom doing it too, and including me, the commander, down his hands and knees with a scraper, because just everybody had to get in the act. Because you had to arrive in a new port looking tiddly.
Spotless, yeah.
Too bad.
Yeah.
Otherwise you're letting the side down. Oh. And the RN, where they also occurred with us, they wouldn't have been hanging back and criticizing us.
No, they sure wouldn't.
Oh, no. Oh,
no. No way, yeah. It wasn't only the foreigners, it was the...
It was our own side as well,
yeah,
yes. Of course, we were still wearing a white ensign, you see, in those days anyway, so it was legitimate for them not to like a shoddy turnout.
Sure.
Quite legitimate. And now that we've stopped wearing a white ensign, we still want to put on a good show for our new flag. So.
Your own pride. Isn't
absolutely,
so,
yeah.
So you came back, did you stop in American ports on the way, or did you just...
San Diego, I expect, was our usual one.
Well, you went around South America, back through the canal.
We went south straight down and back, south down the west coast and north up the east coast. And back through the canal I think that time we went to, I forget whether we went to San Diego or Long Beach. We did both at one time or another.
Mm-hmm. And back home again. How long did this trip take? 3 months?
Yeah, about then.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
September sometime and December sometime.
Well, you hit South America at a good time of the year then.
Yes, we did. Mm-hmm. By design.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah. There's no point going down there in the winter.
No.
And particularly the southern tip of Chile, you know, which is silly. It would be stupid.
Yeah.
And they wouldn't want you anyway, you know. It's nice weather for them, too.
Sure.
They don't want to put on a party in a snowstorm. A parade of guards in a howling gale.
Yeah. So you got back, you're back in 52, wasn't
mm-hmm.
it? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Back to Victoria.
Yeah.
And then did you leave the ship, or were you still...
Well, I got promoted to captain on the 1st of December that year, and I was sent off to Sacklands and the NATO business, and, you know, in Norfolk, Virginia. Yeah. And where that was a, boy, that was a job and a half. It was a fascinating. Sackland had not been established very long. This was January 53 that I got there. I stayed there for 2 years. I was, well, the staff was fairly new, and because I seen Sackland itself had been formed in 50, tail end of 51 or early 52, so it was pretty new. And there were several Canadians there. Debbie Pierce was the chief administrator of the headquarters, and I forget who all were there now, but there were six or eight Canadian billets on the staff, laid down as Canadian billets. And I had one of them, and they put me into a billet which turned out to be too sensitive for a Canadian to hold. So I was moved. Thank to my great glee, because it was a subject about which I knew practically nothing, rightly. And so they moved me into a thing called the Annual Review, which in those days Sackland used to go on his knees to all the nations contributing forces to him, of which there were nine, and ask him, wouldn't they please up their antes? Well, the Annual Review team, which was headed by me, went around once a year to all these nations, mm-hmm. on the knees for, on behalf of Sackland, who at that time was Admiral Lyon McCormick.
Just for the tape, would you say out Sackland?
Oh, Supreme Allied Commander Atlantic.
Yeah.
Okay. It's a sort of an acronym thing, yeah. which the Americans are so fond of, as you know.
Yeah,
we're learning it too, unfortunately. Yeah.
Of course, it's been around for a long time, but it's, yes. I'd like to get it on here.
Quite right. I should have thought of that. And see, he was the seagoing opposite number of SAC Jarl, Supreme Allied Commander Europe, who had his headquarters in those days in Paris, or just outside Paris. And there was a commander-in-chief channel known as Cinque Chan in Portsmouth, who looked after that sort of little area, which was no man's land between the two.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't a no man's land, it was every man's land, because everybody wanted a piece of it, and wanted control of it, because the channel was such an important piece of sea. He was a Brit, Sackland was an American by designation, and Sackyaw was an American by designation. And it always has been, and probably always will be, whilst this organization goes on. I'm just trying to think who Sackyaw was in those days. No, it's gone. I think it was General Ridgway, but I'm not sure.
Well, it's rather an interesting sort of job, though, going around various countries in the show and asking him to up the ante.
With a marked lack of success, of course, because any government is going to do what it's going to do, and no input by a brand new Canadian captain is going to really change their minds to any marked extent.
Mm-hmm.
Except that I was carrying the credentials and the greetings of the Supreme Allied Commander himself. I was his personal emissary, as well as being a staff member. And my traveling team, comprised a national of every country we visited. So we had quite a few people on the team. Some came for part of it, the tour, and some came for all of it. But we endeavored to have a national of the country we were visiting, mm-hmm. on the team at the time we were visiting, which theoretically, at any rate, opened doors for us. And in some cases, I think it closed them. But for the most part, it worked. And in some cases, it's absolutely essential, because, for instance, in Portugal, in Lisbon, none of us spoke Portuguese. So we had to have a Portuguese staff officer from Sackland on the team in order to interpret for us, and also carry on our conversations in staff meetings, not only in our formal plenary sessions, but also in the individual head-to-heads. And it was intensely interesting and intensely frustrating sometimes, And I wouldn't have missed it for anything.
Did you actually accomplish something while I was running around?
Well, I think you did. Even if you wanted, say, somebody to produce another squadron of destroyers, because obviously your contribution, sir, is not commensurate with your importance to the alliance and requirements of SACMAT, which are proven and which has been accepted in principle by the military committee. If his government isn't going to, and you're talking to to military people, you're not talking to government people, you're not talking to the Minister of Defense or
sort of chief and able staff.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And he may agree with you. In fact, he may have been using the same arguments to his boss. But anything you say to him is not going to really cut the ice. Well,
okay.
Because he's tried it. His government have told him what he can have and what he can't have. And the only thing that it really did, I think, and it did do this, was to remind the countries of the existence of SACLAND and the fact that SACLAND was keeping a watch over their contributions, and that not only was he appearing before the military committee annually saying that he needed more forces, he was in between military committee meetings going around to the countries and explaining why he needed more forces and how much more he thought that particular country ought to be able to contribute, from knowing all about their GNP, their army commitments to SACUR, etc., etc., etc. And it certainly had an effect at military committee meetings, because occasionally remarks would be made in plenary session about the visit of SACLAND's annual review team, who came to see us in May, da-di-da-di-da. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, we could not accede to all their requests, but we did, a political sale, manage to up our ante by one destroyer.
Something like that.
So it did have some effect, I guess. And it certainly kept me very happy, because I loved the job and I had a wonderful time.
Real salesman type job.
Well, it was really, but on such a high plane that it was, I don't know, it was an awful lot of fun.
Yeah.
And I had a dandy team of people with me, too. I had a Danish commander particularly, who was my right hand, both in Norfolk and on the road. He was in my section, and he was a wonderful fellow, and we became great friends, and his American Oppo, who was also a commander and who came with us on some of the things, and for a while was our representative, permanent representative in Paris with the standing group. And then we'd pick up people from other divisions of staff for the occasion. A group captain from the plans division, for instance, would come to us when we were going to Britain and to Canada, because he was well up on maritime air. And he would argue with the French, which he enjoyed. Any RAF fellow enjoys arguing with the French, and so does everybody else, that matter. But I formed some friendships which have lasted to this day, and it was a great experience. And I like to think it was of some use to the alliance, I hope.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you had a job to do. I presume it was, how shall I put it? You had a very interesting social life as well, I presume. Mm. There was that constant social effort.
In Norfolk, you mean?
On
tour, yes. Yes, that's true. Yes, not... In almost any country we went to, somebody would give a dinner party for us. Not a great deal more than that, really, because it was a working trip.
Yeah.
And depending on the smaller the country, the bigger the party. For instance, Portugal, they put on a real banquet one year. It was really almost embarrassing. Canada? Nada, go away. Canada was the most difficult one to visit, of course. Because I, as the team leader, had been arguing with Charles Folks, who wasn't about to be argued with.
Mm-hmm.
Not by me, anyway.
No.
We managed to take SACLAND himself up there one time, and that worked a little bit better, but not much. SACLAND, that was Admiral Gerald Wright by that time. And the American, our visit to Washington was mere form, pure form. The American Navy Department or Department of Defense wasn't going to change anything for anything that we said. And it was obvious from the word go. And they were just paying lip service to the concept of the annual review traveling team. And London wasn't an awful lot better, but a little better. They were at least polite about it. The Americans weren't even polite about it.
Weren't they?
No, I couldn't care less. I let it be known to them. But, they, you know, they were calling the shots. They were providing 85%, was it, of the forces? And it was something like that, some horrible percentage. And so they were in the driver's seat. They really were. And don't forget that the Supreme Allied Commander was also Commander-in-Chief U.S. Atlantic Fleet and St. Land, Commander-in-Chief U.S. Atlantic Area. So they had him by the short hairs no matter which way he turned. So he couldn't get too uppity either. See?
Well, mind you can understand that the listener, if you have this 85% figure.
But even if it was only 65%, it'd still be a dominating figure. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, quite.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I expect that they'd rather change it a bit rather than adding to it.
Oh, of course. Everybody was. Each country was trying to seek ways of doing less rather than more. And Canada, as we know to our woe, has found a way of doing less. Yeah. Don't spend any money on defense. It's easy.
Well, you're right. You can always trust the Canadians come up with a solution.
That's right. Can be the wrong one, but it's the solution. Now, we're now down to what... Luxembourg is the only one who has a lesser contribution.
Yeah.
I mean.
Yeah. What sort of contribution were these countries making in those days?
Numerically, as a percentage of GNP, not far off what they are now. They've reduced, I would say, now. I'm not up on the figures. And I don't recall the figures of those days, but my impression is that it hasn't changed a great deal. We have gone down. But the major, and of course France has withdrawn, which was a big blow. Force-wise, it was a big blow. Organization-wise, it was probably a plus, because they're always so difficult. And in the event of war, they will undoubtedly come in on our side anyway, I guess.
Yeah.
But how the command and control is going to work, I don't know, because we have no way of measuring it in advance, at least not from where I sit, anyway. Britain has gone down because their forces have gone down. The U.S., I suppose, has gone down, but maybe not as a percentage of GNP, but in real terms they've gone down. So everybody's contribution in real terms, I should say, is... everybody's contribution in real terms, I should say, has gone down. But you have to remember, of course, that I have been out of the business for a long time, and I do not know the figures
today. Well, what sort of ships would you have? You were running a composite squadron, were you, in understack lines at that time?
No, the standing force Atlantic, is maybe what you're thinking of, had not been formed in those days.
Ah.
So all these forces were non-existent at any one day, but they're all earmarked.
I see. So they'd be going around their country's business, but they're earmarked for this.
Yep.
Yeah.
In fact, all the whole of the Royal Canadian Navy, including ships on the West Coast, were earmarked for Sacklands and counted as Sackland forces. Well, the ones on the West Coast would have to hurry some to get into the Ackland area.
Yes, indeed.
And so it was really a bit of a finagle that they were counted truly as they weren't DDA forces, they were D+30, I think, or D+15, I forget. But they were D+something. Whereas some of the forces would be D-, because you'd have to start moving into position, probably, before the balloon went up, if you could. And this would apply to the British, to the RN, all the RN in the Atlantic area, the home fleet, and the U.S. strike fleet, which was the U.S. Second Fleet. Which was in being, a fleet in being, based in Norfolk, Virginia, but with ships up and down the coast, based in their own home ports, but available to the Commander-in-Chief Atlantic Fleet.
Mm-hmm. Well, this then was really just a staff organization at this point.
Yep.
No real...
Still is.
Yeah, you still...
No operating power at all.
Oh, and what about this NATO standing...
Well, that's come on since my time. I'm not quite sure how it is handled.
Yeah,
but I think maybe it's handled by Sinkland on behalf of Sackland, for instance, because he has an operating Sinkland fleet, I should say, because he is an operating entity. to a large extent, it is self-running. That is to say, the commodore who commands this force, and the job rotates amongst the countries, is the administrative head, I think. But I don't really know. I shouldn't really comment on that.
So, in Saclan, then, was simply an organization set up to sweep or take operational control of some sort if and when something happened.
Yeah.
But in actual fact, it was strictly a paperwork organization,
right,
or a headquarters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You see, in a case of war, the whole U.S. Atlantic Fleet would have become the strike fleet, would have become a Saclan effort, would have been a NATO fleet.
Mm-hmm.
Sinclair Fleet's operations room and so on would have become Saclan's operation room. It's the same man with a different hat. In fact, I once had a lovely opportunity of Admiral McCormick writing to Admiral McCormick saying that he didn't agree with Admiral McCormick.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Paperwork. Yeah,
see?
That's carrying it a bit far.
Yeah. It was his two staffs who were disagreeing.
Yeah.
But both of the letters were signed by Supremo himself.
Yeah.
So he had a silly situation.
Oh,
which only happened in a military organization,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah, so you spent a couple of years there. You and
yes, almost day. Exactly to the day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think probably we seem to have been talking we've run on here for half an hour and covered a lot of ground, so perhaps we could
Pick up
next week.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Oh, I'll have to look at my book.